Welcome. Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for joining us today for another Political Rewind. We've been traffic challenged here on the show today. Apparently, I-75 has been pretty well shut down. Sam Olens just walked in. How bad is it up there, Sam Olens? Mr. Olens, how bad is it?
If you don't want to move for an hour, it's great.
Oh. And you, Galloway, were stuck, too.
Oh, yeah, I peeled off to 41 real quick and kind of slogged through that way.
Well, all right, so if you all are traveling up, and I am told down I-75 right now, the traffic has gone slowed to a crawl in both directions, so please be careful. Keep tuned to, I'm sure, later in the afternoon, if you're going home, say, during All Things Considered, and you're here in Metro Atlanta, they'll have reports. We just wish you a safe commute. So as we get started here, just a reminder, you can watch us on Facebook Live by going to the GPB News Facebook page. I just learned from our IT wizard, Deborah Gilbert, who has kind of been our champion on Facebook Live, that as many as 1,000 and more people have been watching the Facebook Live feed, not necessarily when we're on the air, but of course you can watch it. It's posted on that page well after we're live. So we're excited by your interest in seeing the show. And as usual, we want you to send us your comments while we're on the air. We'll read the ones that we can get to. And of course, you can tweet us at PoliticsGPB as well. We're headed to Columbus, Georgia tomorrow night. Very excited about that. And we're going to be at the River Center. Apparently, we've got a pretty full house. If I were you, I wouldn't give up on the idea of coming. I would register because we typically, you lose some people. But go to gpb.org/community if you want to register. We'll be starting the show at around 7 o'clock tomorrow night and really looking forward to being there. Hi, Jim Galloway.
Hello, Bill. Good morning. Good afternoon.
You know, Jim, I'm a little bit thrown because, of course, you're with us on Mondays and Fridays, but we're so glad you could join your colleague, Greg Bluestein, our regular from the AJC on Wednesday afternoon. Thank you both for being here. Galloway, of course, the lead political writer for the AJC. He's in Wednesday and Sunday's paper. He and Bluestein are blogging all the time at Political Insider, updating people on political news. And Greg Bluestein, of course, the hardest working political reporter in show business. Hi, Greg.
How are you? I'm doing great.
I haven't been out in the traffic. I'm fine.
I just came from a Stacey Abrams event at an eatery in downtown Atlanta. It took me about 25 minutes to get here, so pretty bad for a 4-mile commute.
Coming up the connector. All right. This is another one of the days that we get really thrilled about because we are reunited again. Michael Thurmond, of course, Mike is the CEO of DeKalb County. I could go through all of his credentials. He was the state labor commissioner. He was a U.S. Senate candidate in 2010. He was the superintendent of DeKalb County schools at a time when they were in crisis. Do I go on, Mr. Thurmond?
No, please stop.
And he is joined by Sam Olens, who, of course, is the former chairman of the Cobb County Commission, former attorney general of the state of Georgia, former president of Kennesaw State University, and now out there as an attorney for Dentons, the world's largest law firm.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled you could be here as well. And in fact, later in the show, we're going to have some news about Stacey Evans and your old job in the Cobb County Commission. But let's hold that off for right now. Greg, first of all, what was the Stacey Abrams event, and did any news come out of it?
No big news, but it's just another sign of her evolving strategy when it comes to the general election campaign. She is focusing her message more and more on economy. She was there to talk to restaurant patrons about her economic message, about her push for a more diverse economy that's more inclusive of small businesses, that helps better train a workforce. So as Republicans Casey Cagle and Brian Kemp fight over social issues like guns and immigration, she wants to send the message that she's focused on the economy, which will be, in her view, a more easier general election sell than maybe some of her primary campaign messaging.
So let me do a go-round, and I'll let you decide. First one who wants to answer this, go ahead. Is Stacey Abrams better positioned because she can go right to the general and start getting her message out? Or in fact, is the runoff between Brian Kemp and Casey Cagle going to keep them more in the headlines, keep them more energized? How do you political Galloway okay, raise right, his
I'll
hand first?
Up, I'll jump in. I'll jump in here. It depends on what she does. You know, I mean, this is it's actually a kind of golden time for a candidate who doesn't have a runoff to worry about. And if she can raise immediate money and get herself on TV and start defining herself to the general election voter, yeah, it's an advantage. If she doesn't do that, and of course she's already proven to be an unorthodox candidate. You know, if she gets swallowed up by the back and forth between Casey Cagle and Brian Kemp, I that's not good for her, I don't think.
Michael, Sam, how do you react to that?
Oh, I'm deferring to the Attorney General. No.
So I think that at the end of the day, you need to be careful what you tell people you're going to do. Because by the time you pay for K-12, higher ed, and Medicaid, there's not a lot of other monies. So for either of the two Republican candidates or Stacey Abrams, if you start promising a lot more than you can actually do, that will be used against you.
I think it's such a non-traditional political environment, primarily defined by Trump politics across the country. It's hard to use previous history to define where we are right now and how the public is responding to a political candidate, be they Cagle or Kemp or Abrams. And I agree with Galloway that typically those are the two tracks you would follow. But right now, it's such a fluid political environment. Either Donald Trump is going to be a Nobel Prize winner or he's going to have egg on his face. See, I mean, you know, it's just those two extremes that we're looking at just in the next 7 days. So who knows?
And I think a lot of it also depends on how sharp Cagle and Kemp get with each other. We're already seeing a really bitter battle between those two. Even their campaign strategists are going at war with each other over Twitter increasingly. But where their rhetoric goes really will matter, because you're already seeing Democrats use what Clay Tippins, what Hunter Hill said about Cagle and Kemp against them, against both Cagle and Kemp. Now, I think if this Republican race continues to get more sharper and sharper and sharper, it'll give Abrams a lot more ammo. And I think in October, no matter what, I mean, the bitter Republican primary runoff will be a thing of the past, but still, it will still be dredged up, and Abrams will look to use their own, you know, Republican words against those two candidates.
All right. By the way, Ann Gerber just sent us a Facebook Live message saying, connector okay now, just exited. Let's hope that Ann wasn't watching on Facebook Live while she was driving to get off the connector. Thank you for that message, Ann. All right. So speaking of the increasingly bitter battle, Greg, I don't know if this came out under your byline, but start with you on this. So Cagle has just been in Las Vegas to raise money. Tell us a little bit about that trip.
Yeah, so he took a 2-day trip to Vegas this week. I think he's back this morning. You know, it immediately raised speculation about whether or not he was going to meet with Sheldon Adelson, who is the billionaire casino mogul who is probably the biggest Republican mega donor, who almost single-handedly funded Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign. It has also been sort of a rite of passage for Republicans in Georgia. Not only did Newt Gingrich go to him, but Nathan Deal went to him in 2014. So it raised questions about whether or not Casey Cagle was also going to meet with him. His campaign said no. They you know, two ships passing in the night. They missed each other, but that they would more than welcome his support. Brian Kemp jumped on that immediately, saying, "If you don't believe that Casey Cagle met with some sort of casino executive while he's out there, then you are. I've got a bridge to sell you."
I think Brian Robinson, our friend who's working on the Cagle campaign, responded to that. As a matter of fact. And made some cutting comment. How unlike Brian. So what do we, it does seem, do we know who we met with, Jim? Do we know anything about it?
Because data center executives is what he said, a convention of those people. In other words, he was going to Las Vegas to visit with people who go to Las Vegas.
Okay, well, of course, the reason I ask that, because it's certainly correct that the first thing, Sam Olens, that people might wonder is whether or not the question the Kemp people raised is Casey Cagle, mingling with casino interests, and will that put him on the side of the casinos in the next session or two of the legislature?
So the main company out there is called Switch, mm-hmm. and they're involved, I think, in the Douglas County center there. And clearly there's a bunch of data centers for him to get some dollars from. And clearly the Georgia legislature passed a bill that really helped all of the mm-hmm. proposed data centers. I'm surprised Kemp didn't go after him for, okay, you pass a bill and then you get money from them. I would have thought that would have been a better attack than casinos, to be honest. I think everyone always overplays casinos. If you look at the casinos around the country, few of them are doing well. And I know when Sheldon Adelson came to Atlanta several years ago, I met with him as attorney general, and he literally said, look, if you're looking for a building for casinos, it will be closed in 5 years. If you're looking for a mega entertainment center that as part of it includes a casino, then that's a viable business plan. And I've seen very little of that proposed in Georgia.
Yeah, there is you have a union of horse racing people and casino people that expect to pitch racinos in the coming session of the legislature. And we have to remember, we've got that recent SCOTUS decision that makes mm-hmm. That makes gambling on sporting events legal, which adds another revenue stream to the situation.
Given, Mike Thurman, that Stacey Abrams has said that under the right circumstances, she would support allowing casinos to be built in Georgia. And I think she says only if the legislature, Greg, also approves
a needs-based scholarship for Hope Scholarship.
So given that, Mike, should we expect the casinos could play? What kind of role is it going to play in the messaging in the months ahead?
I think polling has shown that there is a broad base of support for casinos in Georgia, and it's a bipartisan type of base there. I outside looking in, I also see Casey Cagle doing something of a ricochet with the runoff and then the general. He has the win track to the right and get back to the left, or at least to the center. And I think casino gambling is one of those issues that could transcend the party labels and generate support from independent voters, which will be critical to success in November. And the same with Stacey Abrams. She recognizes it's not just a base issue, but it's an issue that will allow her to expand her base into independent voters.
Would you run on a platform, not the main message, but one of your messages being it's good for Georgia if we have limited casino licenses made available?
I run on that platform and emphasize education funding. That was this other guy named Miller who tried something similar to that, and it turned out pretty well. So I would really replicate that strategy with casinos, well, and not just needs-based, because there's money that needs to be invested in education.
Well, it worked out well for Governor Miller when he was passing the lottery for Hope Scholarship, Sam. But on the other hand, he had a much closer re-election battle than many people thought he might, and he certainly had the conservative Christian churches really out there trying to get him. So, I mean, it's a tricky situation, isn't it?
So, first of all, even with the Supreme Court decision, you still would need to pass legislation in Georgia, and consistent with prior Georgia cases from way before any of us were born, I believe you would need a constitutional amendment. It's not a statute. It's an amendment. That's tough. That's tough to get through. You know, I candidly was raised 40 minutes away from Atlantic City. I just don't view casinos as any kind of panacea.
There's also kind of a loophole, though for Republicans who opposed casino gambling. And both Brian Kemp and Casey Cagle both said they oppose any sort of expansion of gambling, especially expansion that includes casinos. So did Governor Deal, by the way. But after his reelection, he said, I will continue to oppose it, but I would also not necessarily veto the enabling legislation because it requires a constitutional amendment. So he gave himself sort of an out. He said, I continue to oppose this, but if lawmakers want to pass a constitutional amendment and if voters approve it, I won't veto the legislation that allows it. Now, that never came to pass because it got blocked in the legislature, but it does give either Brian Kemp or Casey Cagle a pathway to do so if they're elected governor and if lawmakers want to go that route. I don't think it's going to happen in the near future because there's such stiff opposition in the legislature, but there is a path.
All right, I'm glad I have lawyers at the table because I'm about to ask a stupid question that I need a lawyer's response to. Sam, you point out that an amendment to the Constitution, you'd have to have an amendment because the Georgia Constitution prevents gambling, right? Can a Supreme Court decision has no power to overturn a state amendment to a constitution?
No, of course not. The decision by
Don't say of course not. I told you it was stupid.
I'm sorry. So the decision in the U.S. Supreme Court was on the basis of a theory called anti-commandeering. You know that better as the 10th Amendment. So by definition, what that case said is that Congress can't pass a bill to give itself rights that are nowhere enumerated in the federal Constitution. So once again, if you're talking 10th Amendment, it's up to the states for what they do. And there's a case from either like 1923 or 1926, and you've got to comply with that case. So it's going to require a constitutional amendment.
Okay, so to close out the segment, Jim Galloway, do you imagine we're going to see much about casinos except on the are we going to see much about casinos, period, in the election ahead?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not. But I would say, this is a trip to Las Vegas isn't something that a Republican candidate for governor could even have done 10 years ago without killing himself.
Well,
this won't hurt Casey, I don't think.
I don't know. Christina Randall Turner sends us a Facebook post saying Cagle needs to be careful in Vegas. Thank you for that, Christina. Let's do this. Let's get a break out of the way and come back because, Jim Galloway, you had a really interesting column about Karen Handel and her taking on Donald Trump on a big issue. We'll talk about what that's all about after this.
You know, selling a car can be a hassle, but donating it is a whole different story. Let us take it off your hands or off your driveway and turn it into public radio and maybe even a tax deduction. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, and here is how to donate.
Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Sam Olens, Michael Thurman, Greg Bluestein, and Jim Galloway, a double threat from the political staff of the AJC. Another couple of quick messages. Douglas Hooker, who may very well be the Doug Hooker we know from his time at ARC, says that in the gubernatorial race, Stacey Abrams is going to have more time to manage her message, which is going to be an advantage for her. He's responding to the first thing we talked about. But the Republicans will have a default platform and a lot more news and media attention. Thank you for that. Greg, one final note on the issue of casinos before we move on.
Yeah, I think one of the more surprising results of the 2012 primary was that a narrow majority of Republicans actually backed expansion of casino gambling on that ballot way back then. We were all kind of stunned by it. It still doesn't mean that, you know, there's been a general broadening of a view on that, but it does mean that there even some of the more core Republicans are open to that if it does indeed fund the Hope Scholarship or other higher education purposes.
By the way, Douglas, the Douglas Hooker who sent us Facebook post just said the one I'm talking about is his dad. So this is Douglas Hooker Jr. Greg Bluestein, Jim Galloway, you wrote about Karen Handel in your column online and in the Dead Tree edition of the paper. She's taken issue with one of Donald Trump's shining glories of a policy. Yes.
Yeah. She is. Last Thursday, she very politely condemned his policy on tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum from Canada, Mexico, and most importantly, the European Union. And it's a necessary thing. My point in that column was to say that, you know, the dynamics of 2016 are still there. Donald Trump only carried that district by 1 point. And this isn't a bad thing for her to put some air between her and the president, much as she might not like people to talk about that. But most importantly, you've got this really interesting dynamic building in the Republican Party, and it could come to a head in Georgia quicker than almost anywhere else, because that's that same day that Trump put on the tariffs on enacted the tariffs of aluminum and steel. This German magazine had a little anecdote in which it said that Emmanuel Macron in April on his trip to the White House was told by Donald Trump that he intended an import on all luxury vehicles into the U.S. and wouldn't stop until the last Mercedes-Benz disappeared from Fifth Avenue in New York. And, of course, we've got Mercedes-Benz here. We've got Porsche here. And those are some very, very big economic interests for Georgia.
You know, Jim pointed out in his column that, of course, Mercedes-Benz is up there in 6th District territory. And while Porsche has now moved their headquarters down to the airport, they used to be up there. Mm-hmm. And it's likely there are a lot of Porsche employees who still may live in the district.
Look, it's my understanding that there's a 10% tariff for our cars going to Europe and a 2.5% tariff the other way. By definition, that's wrong. We may disagree with how the president does it, but everyone's going to agree that our so-called allies and friends ought to treat us equally. So I think that's frankly a very important topic.
Well, I really do miss the old Republican Party. I really do.
Michael Thurman, I mean, you just won line of the month.
The Republican president of the United States, you know, tariffs as far as I can see, and you know, deficits as a result of the tax legislation, all of those issues, the deficit hawks are gone, no more free trade. But I think to Mr. Galloway's point, though, this is a fight over the suburbs and suburban white women in particular. Not just in the six, but all across Georgia, maybe even across this nation. And I think Representative Handel is really trying to fashion a platform and a strategy that might allow her to really at least survive or even prosper in what is building up to be a blue wave, and particularly in the suburbs among independent and moderate suburban white female voters.
And, Greg, let's not forget that Democrats have to pick a candidate in the runoff on July 24th to oppose Handel. And you've been covering that race off and on. Galloway points out you've got a very popular business leader, successful businessman in Kevin Abel. And then you've got a woman who has championed gun regulations because of the tragic death of her son, Lucy McBath. And it's going to be fascinating to watch how that plays out between the two of them.
Yeah, both of them have been hypercritical of Donald Trump in a way that John Ossoff was at the beginning of his campaign last year. And they want to see, for Handel, this is sort of, Jim described it as a polite, disagreement. But, you saw her at the beginning of the campaign last year, really keeping Donald Trump at arm's length, and near the end of the campaign, accepting his help and any other Republican who is willing to help her because he still remains very popular with Republicans even in the 6th District. But there's an attempt for them now to sort of make use of that daylight between Karen Handel and Donald Trump.
So if possible, CEO Thurman just referenced the blue wave. It looks more to me like a blue trickle. With each week, that seems to be, less and less.
Well, it's the, midterm election,
historically, you're right.
Historically, that will be more energy in the party that's out of power.
And a 3.8% unemployment rate looks pretty good.
It really does. And that, I read somewhere, it's not my line, but the people who are most disappointed by that number, at least in some conservative mind, were Democrats who were running to get elected to Congress.
Right.
And that's going to have a great impact on ultimately the success of either the Republicans or Democrats, because we do have a strong labor market right now.
Jim, why don't we speculate about whether President Trump, in his hopes that Republicans will retain control of the House and Senate, might be willing to allow an incumbent like a Karen Handel to take him on just a little bit over one of his policies. This is not a guy who likes being criticized.
No. But in the end, she'll have the Koch brothers behind her on this issue
because the Koch brothers, yes,
because they're putting their organizations behind an anti-tariff campaign. And Sam, to your point, is myself and a lot of people agree with you on that, on the basic imbalance between tariffs on cars coming from the U.S. versus coming from Europe. But I think their point is that a tariff war isn't the tactic to use, that some quieter negotiation is the best path.
Sam?
Jim, I'm not going to disagree with you. And it's the owner of a car that is definitely nowhere close to luxury. I defer to the AJC salaries to buy those vehicles.
my Accord.
This is from the man who is now an attorney at the world's largest law firm.
I'm driving a Honda Civic. You know, it's a great car.
I'll match my 2,667,000 miles against yours.
All right. By the way, it is interesting that just this morning, one of the breaking news stories of the morning was that Karen Handel's not the only Republican on the Hill who has decided to take issue with the president. Speaker Ryan, for what seems to be the first time in forever, Michael Thurman, has spoken out in response to the president's accusations that the FBI was spying on him when he was running and when he first was elected, and said no signs of that at all. Ryan hasn't done that very often.
Well, no, of course, now that he's retiring, he feels liberated to do so. But I think as we get closer to November, you will see more and more Republicans, as Mr. Galloway pointed out, create some air or some distance between themselves and the president in order to progress their own political agendas. And I believe that President Trump will recognize that it's important to try to, as best they can, to maintain control of the House and the Senate, because hopefully his advisors are telling him that if Democrats gain control of the House of Representatives, it will be a totally different environment for the president in Washington, D.C.
And on
that note, Speaker Ryan warned Trump that he should not try to pardon himself, saying, quote, no one is above the law. So he tried to send a very, telling message early on not to take that route.
One thing, we need some Republicans, and Karen Handel made a small step, who are actually running for re-election, to actually speak out in terms of issues of importance to the American people.
You don't really expect that to happen, do you, Republican Sam Oldens?
Look, personally, I think you're covering issues that don't mean anything when it comes to November. Not to upset the political folks in the room, but I think the economy is always the issue, and no one's really paying attention to the first 2 minutes of CBS News or CNN or Fox or MSNBC, et cetera. I think the bigger issue, candidly, this week was the majority leader of the Senate saying, you're going to be spending less time at the beach because I want to move these nominations through.
Well, and in fact, we have that queued up to talk about in a few minutes. he took the advice that David Perdue has been offering him ever since he arrived in the United States Senate, and has basically gotten rid of the summer break. We will get to that in just a minute. But in the meantime, just to put out period on all of that. The other story that broke today, this morning, was that in terms of the tariffs, is there was a readout of a phone conversation that President Trump had after imposing the tariffs with President of Canada, President Trudeau, which apparently became very testy, and not unlike some of the other conversations the president has had with European leaders since this all started, Jim.
Yeah, and it's... It's kind of disturbing when you see a regular pattern of a U.S. president picking a fight with a very, very tested and trusted friend. I could easily point to Mr. Oldens' law firm, which has a former U.S. ambassador to Canada there, who would probably say very much the same thing, Gordon Giffen.
Yeah. All right. You know what, Sam? We're going to jump the rundown because you already brought up the August recess. David Perdue was on Fox News, Fox and Friends, early this morning. He talked about again, we've talked about it on the show for a long time. Purdue says these members of the Senate take way too much time off. We have a lot of business that we need to accomplish. Let's stay in session. They stayed in session a bit longer last year as a result of this. This year, McConnell is basically saying he's wiping out, in many ways, much of the recess. And here's what Purdue said about that on Fox and Friends.
This is the first time in U.S. history, Brian, that we've seen this kind of historic obstructionism in blocking the president's confirmation. So we hope that we'll get those moving. And the second thing, this is not about the August recess. It's about doing our jobs and getting our work done. We've got to fund the federal government before September 30th.
So this is, Sam, this is Purdue saying that one of the reasons they need to stay in session is Democrats have blocked so many of the Trump nominees.
Well, I never knew the ambassador of Luxembourg was such a controversial position. I mean, it took 9 months.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by definition. But I also think Senator Perdue's second comment is just as important. When's the last time any of us saw Congress actually pass a budget on time? And the president made it clear that he doesn't want to see another bill come before him where five people chose the national budget. And I think he's 100% correct.
If I can, if I could inject a note of crassness here, David Perdue is not running for re-election this year.
Well, I'm glad you did. So, Mike, that is part of this story. Although I don't want to completely get away from what Sam Olens is talking about. Democrats have far more seats to defend in the U.S. Senate. They need to get out on the road and campaign. You can't help but think that maybe just a little of this is politically motivated.
So you mean this is not about good government? You're kidding me. I just assume, absolutely, it's about trying to create more obstacles for those Democrats who are running for re-election to mount successive campaigns between now and November. And, you know, but give Senator Perdue credit. He said it with a straight face, and many will believe it, but it's just not so.
Well, Greg, I think we have to give David Perdue his due. He has argued for this long before we were talking about who was up for re-election. He's wanted to do this every year.
Yeah, this
since
is sort of a pet cause of his. And last year, he made the same exact push. This year, he just amplified it even more. He had a hashtag. It was "Make Congress Work Again," all one word, hashtag. He held press conferences with conservative groups. He was on TV all the time about it. So, yes, it does. You know, it likely helps Republicans facing tough re-election challenges, but it also is part – and Democrats facing tough – it makes it harder for Democrat incumbents. But it also is sort of a pet cause of his.
Yeah. Jim, Sam does make a point that Democrats have slowed down the process of endorsements. And I think that we all do have a right to say what's going on here. On the other hand, they would argue, well, remember Merrick Garland?
Right. I mean, if you talk to a Democrat there in Congress, they're going to say, well, look at some of the vetting that has not occurred with some of Mr. Trump's nominations. They do deserve scrutiny, and then remember that in the last year of President Obama's second term, judicial nominations were declared just null and void, that they weren't allowed.
Sam, is this really more a product of partisanship than it is of an obstructionist policy of Democrats specifically? Again, I point to Merrick Garland, the Obama nominee for the Supreme Court, who for a year couldn't get a hearing.
Look, it always makes a difference who you're replacing. If it is a conservative leaving the Supreme Court, it's easier to get a conservative to take their place. If it's a liberal, for instance, leaving the Supreme Court, and the new president wants to replace that justice with a conservative, by definition, that's a different ballgame. But, you know, whether you're Republican, whether you're Democrat, or whether you're human, you can't frankly think that our Congress works well.
No. And the other part of this, the optics here, but the optics are important. And my question for David Perdue would be, you know, other than President Trump's nominations, what can Congress do during that? What can the Senate do during that period? Because we know that there's a whole long list of things that if they even touch, they jeopardize the November results of the November election one way or the other. We have seen that with Kevin McCarthy's concern over immigration reform, for instance.
How about passing a budget?
Yeah. What's in the budget?
Yeah.
And how is Medicare and Social Security treated? And those become very, very hot issues in October.
Listen, I've got to get a break in here. Do you have any quick thing you want to say in response to that,
I'm
Sam?
I'm not as witty as Mr. Galloway.
All right. Let's do this. Let's get our second break of the show out of the way. When we come back, we have three people in this studio today who have very close ties to the city of Athens, Georgia. And Greg Bluestein, you wrote a interesting piece about Athens politics the other day. I want to talk about that for a few minutes when we get back. This is Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, Clint Watts worked for the U.S. Army and the FBI in counterintelligence, but says he's done some of his best work as a private citizen on social media with a home computer and credit cards. He's tracked jihadists and Russian actors meddling in American politics, and he testified to Congress on how to strengthen American democracy. His new book is Messing with the Enemy. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Michael Thurman, chairman of the DeKalb County Commission, grew up in
Athens, Georgia.
Athens, Georgia. Greg Bluestein, premier political reporter for the AJC, went to university at
Athens, Georgia.
Mr. Galloway,
class of 77.
So Sam Olens and I, both transplants from the North, are going to back completely out of this conversation. Greg, you wrote an interesting piece the other day saying that the politics of Athens. How did you describe what's happening there?
It's the most progressive government in Georgia now. Yeah, they have a brand new mayor. Five new commissioners, even the sitting judge who was a former Republican lawmaker was ousted, and all the candidates who won were running on a progressive platform endorsed by this very powerful new progressive group that just emerged out of basically as an offshoot of the Occupy movement has come to power. And you're seeing sort of a new wave of Athens leaders who hope to sort of transplant their mission and their vision for Athens to other cities. They're tired of seeing Decatur, Clarkston, Atlanta, some other, you know, progressive, more left-leaning cities take the lead. They want Athens to take the lead.
Well, Mike, you got your political career started by the voters in Athens, Georgia, and the surrounding area when they put you in the Georgia House. How do you view what Greg's talking about?
It was an earthquake in terms of local politics in Athens, Georgia. Athens, despite its very, quote, liberal reputation, is really has very moderate political environment. There have been a long succession of Democratic mayors, or at least avowedly Democratic mayors, who work very closely with the business community. But Athens is being transformed now in fundamental ways, and it'll be quite an experiment to watch how this plays out in terms of progressive politics and how that relationship will play out with the Georgia General Assembly and the governor's office unless there's a major change at the top of state government, because the University of Georgia is the most beloved of all institutions in Georgia politics. No offense to my friends from Georgia Tech. So this is going to be quite interesting to watch this play out.
Okay, my question for you two, Mike and Greg, is does this have any impact on the 10th District congressional race with Jody Heiss?
It's tough for me to see an impact because the two better known candidates who had money and who were out there working really hard both fell to a relatively unknown candidate who really didn't have the same sort of campaign apparatus. So, you know, it does show how a very unified Athens can show up and turn out. But because Athens is such a small sliver of the 10th district.
Yeah, Clark County is the smallest district in the state.
County in the state. But I think it does say a lot more about what happens with those two Democrats who won those state house seats in last year's special election.
Absolutely. The configuration of the congressional district is decidedly conservative outside of Athens. But as Greg just pointed out, it will be interesting to see how Gonzalez and what's the other legislator's name?
Jonathan Wallace.
And Jonathan Wallace, you know, whether they are able to retain those seats. That was a huge surprise for me and everyone else that they were elected to, I guess, one of the seats that I held. But it's something else is amiss. And one of the challenges that I think the progressive ticket will face is not to alienate the local African-American community. Because one of those seats, we had one a grandson of a beloved community leader, Ms. Corrine Neely, was defeated by one of the progressive candidates in a ward that has historically sent an African-American to the county, to the city council and the county commission. So I would ask and hope that Kelly Gertz and Russell Edwin and others will reach out and make sure that those bridges aren't burnt between the progressive politics and the more traditional African-American politics that existed there in Athens.
All right, Sam, do we believe that what happened in Athens could be a template for what might happen in, say, Cobb County, which is trending more purple, certainly? And we have these reports. Was this your story, Jim Galloway, about Stacey Evans?
Well, that was I had heard that talk in the legislature this spring, but it was before the runoff was over, so I didn't pursue it. But there was a line in the Marietta Daily Journal last Saturday.
But you tell them what the story says.
It says you've got business people in Cobb County looking at the dynamics and seeing that if Cobb County is going to turn Democratic again, well then Stacey Evans, who represented kind of the economic engine of Cobb County with her House district, she wouldn't be a bad choice to run for Cobb County Commission chair.
Sam?
So first, I think it's more than 2 years away for Cobb County to be in that position. But I think there's a more important issue where Mike Thurman's going to agree with me. And that is just as mayors and council are nonpartisan, there's nothing I did as Cobb County chairman that was Republican or Democrat. And I think as you look at a lot of these elections, specifically Cobb, Gwinnett, et cetera, Charlotte Nash is an outstanding chairwoman. She isn't an outstanding Republican chairwoman. She's an outstanding leader to her community. And I think people shouldn't put too much emphasis on partisanship in these local government positions. And I believe that CEO Thurman similarly believes that.
Oh, you're absolutely right. There's nothing partisan about a pothole. They don't discriminate. They damage cause regardless of how you might vote. And secondly, it's very important that we keep in mind, and I was thinking, I was watching the Bobby Kennedy documentary last night. Something is different in 2018. And I'm thinking about 1968. There's been an unmooring, an untethering of the politics and how people are aligned or being realigned. And so that's why I'm just not certain as to what will or will not happen. And no one should be in November of 2018, because America is a very unique place. One of the things that Trump has done, he's a disruptor. And it's not just within the Republican Party. He has disrupted politics in America.
So I want to move on in a second, but Sam, I want to go.
Let's go back to it. So look, Stacey represented a very small piece of Cobb, and she's a very bright lawyer. I think she has a great career ahead of herself. Lisa Cupid is a very bright county commissioner representing
South
Cobb.
And you've got Bob Ott.
And you have Bob Ott, who talks both about chairman and about a proposed new city of East Cobb. 2 years is a lifetime politically, and I think all this is cheap talk at this point. I think a community like Cobb is not going to pay attention until way after this November.
So, Greg, what I'm hearing both Mike Thurman and Sam Olin say is that despite the fact that we are more divided along partisan lines than ever before as we look at our national politics, maybe as we look at our state government politics, they're saying that when you get down to the local level, when you have a chairman, and let's face it, Sam Olin's during his long tenure was considered one of the best commission chairs that we've had because he was so willing to work with everyone. Maybe Charlotte Nash up in Gwinnett is the same. Maybe the partisanship, they're saying, doesn't extend to the local level.
Well, I mean, voters want results, and they want results on a local matter. And look at the Athens story. Athens used to be nonpartisan as well. Now it's definitely become a lot more partisan and progressive. But a lot of those candidates promised an awful lot. They promised free bus fares. They promised more flexibility on immigration. They promised a range of different, more financial aid for startups. A lot of things that they might not be able to deliver. And that's what I've talked to former Mayor Doc Eldridge, who said, and this is like the dog who caught the car. Now it's up for them to deliver. And they're going to be under a lot of pressure to show what they can do, not just in Athens, but any of these candidates who went on bold promises.
My classmate. We graduated. We were in the same class.
I don't disagree that partisanship matters, much less on a local level. But at some point, the electorate has to look at its governing the individuals who govern them, and they have to see themselves in there. And for instance, in Gwinnett County, where you have a true dearth of diversity in the local government, we just saw a Democratic senator, Kurt Thompson, lose to Sheikh Rahman, a Bangladeshi immigrant, in large part because, Kurt Thompson just got caught in a crossfire. These people want to see people who look like them in government.
So, Jim, that's just like Don Wicks and Steve Thompson and Cobb years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Let's we only have a few minutes left, but I want to get to one other issue because I think this was there were several things that popped up this week that raised questions about whether there's any such thing as a value on morality among elected leaders these days. An interview in which former President Clinton got rather angry with an NBC reporter because he asked them about Monica Lewinsky. The former president apologized later, said he probably should have handled it better. But you also now had Ralph Reed, Jim, giving an interview to the New York Times. We have a little piece of it here, and the question asked of him pretty strongly was, why don't you hold President Trump accountable to higher moral standards?
When he appoints conservatives and pro-lifers to the judiciary, starting with Justice Neil Gorsuch, when he allows states to remove Planned Parenthood from their Medicaid programs for funding, when he supports school choice, when he signs a tough federal anti-human trafficking bill that was one of our top public policy priorities, when he moves the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, when he withdraws from the Iran nuclear deal, he is achieving public policies that we strongly support because of our belief in the sanctity of life and strengthening the family. And I personally think that the last thing you or anyone else wants is a church-based political movement whose primary function is to be the moral policeman of society and decide who is or who isn't righteous enough to govern.
Mike, speaking of Athens, Ralph Reed grew up out there too. He, of course, founder of the Christian Coalition, enormously successful in motivating conservative Christians over more than a couple of decades to get to the polls. Doesn't have quite the clout that he used to have. But what do you make of his notion that morality is transactional?
Complete disaggregation of the moral imperative from the political imperative within the evangelical movement. It's stunning when you hear him in his soliloquy state the political imperative being more important. Man of God, and there are laws that exist above man's laws that we should all at least aspire to. And he said, the way I understood what Mr. Reed was saying, is that no, we seek the political imperative and we see it as more important and more significant than the moral one.
Sam?
So last time I checked, Bill Clinton has sort of been the big savior of the Democratic Party despite Monica Lewinsky. So I think the hypocrisy runs deep across the political spectrum.
Well, yeah, I mean, Greg and Jim, that's certainly what Sam's point is. The point he's making is certainly what Hillary Clinton was accused of during the campaign, that she had a lot of nerve to go after Donald Trump for some of his outrageous comments about women, his behavior allegedly toward women, given what she dealt with in the White House, Jim.
Absolutely. Look, and I think Sam's absolutely right. I think and I think Mr. Clinton is having to come with to terms with the Me Too movement
now. But in fact, Sam can be
belatedly, but
right.
Well, but Democrats never really presented themselves as being morally superior to other folks. That's the difference.
I got to take a time out because we're close out of time. But Greg, I did not say that this was a partisan issue. I did not say that Bill Clinton gets a pass because he's a Democrat and Trump, but that's the way Sam Olens argued it, and that's not what we're saying at all.
I will say this: Ralph Reed certainly didn't give Bill Clinton a pass, on that issue. So you are seeing a complete 180 on these issues from not just Ralph Reed, but also other evangelical leaders who are saying basically the political governmental ends. And not the personal
the
ends
justify the means.
I think the question,
it's
Jim,
amoral politics.
But that's right, Jim. I think the question is there a place for moral values in politics at all, regardless of your being a Democrat or a Republican? Gary Hart couldn't get away with it.
No, Gary Hart couldn't get it. And look, the Me Too movement is a moral movement of a kind. It is a retribution in many respects for the treatment that women have had to endure for the last several thousand years.
Sam,
it's a moral backlash.
You know, news at 11, politicians are hypocritical.
but again, that's not the question.
You're very, very quickly, Bill. If I can squeeze
it, we're down to the last minute.
Okay, Stormy Daniels is coming here on July 22nd, a Sunday. And she's going to have two shows in Brookhaven, a stripper. And I have not heard the first churchman condemn that. And you know why? Because it's hard to condemn Stormy Daniels without throwing shade on Donald Trump.
Well, I promise you that neither CEO Thurmond or I will be there.
Well, it's in the camp. No. I'm not. I'm out. No.
Again, I go back to this question. Of whether is there any moral compass anymore for politicians of whatever stripe. And I think we could do an entire show on it, and maybe we should.
Bill, history will cast the final ballot. Don't allow the day's headlines or who's in the White House right now to influence or help allow us to believe that just because you're in the White House, you're right.
All right. Thank you, Michael Thurmond. You got the final word on today's show. Mike Thurmond, Sam Olens, Greg Bluestein, Jim Galloway. And for those of you who fought through horrible traffic, thank you for getting here nonetheless. We have lots of comments on Facebook Live that we were not able to get to. Go to the GPB News page on Facebook, and you can read them. You can join the conversation there, and we're keeping track of what you have to say. Tomorrow afternoon, Tom Faust and I are heading down with Tyler Morris to Columbus to do our show tomorrow night. We're really looking forward to meeting a lot of you who are going to turn out for us. Until our next show on Friday, I'm Bill Nygut. See you later.